Hello, you are listening to the Deliberative Democracy Digest. This is Lucy Parry, your editor speaking, and I'm very happy to introduce this next piece, which is a conversation between Canning Malkin and Graham Smith. Canning is the research coordinator for Isway Foundation, and she's published a number of reports for the Global Citizens Assembly Network. Graham Smith is Professor of Politics at the Centre for the Study of Democracy at University of Westminster. He's also the chair of the Knowledge Network on Climate Assemblies, and climate assemblies are the topic of his new book, We Need to Talk About Climate, How Climate Assemblies Can Help Us Solve the Climate Crisis. So in this conversation, Canning talks to Graham about his key insights from researching and writing the book, which is linked on the webpage below this recording. This book is completely free to access and read online. It's published open access by the University of Westminster Press, who also, by the way, published the Journal of Deliberative Democracy, which is also free and open access. You should go and check it out. But for now, I hope you enjoy listening to this conversation, the latest addition to the Deliberative Democracy Digest.
First, Graham, would you like to introduce yourself, the book, the point of the book, what the book is trying to address, what your inspiration for the book was?
Sure. Graham Smith, I'm a professor of politics at the Centre for the Study of Democracy at the University of Westminster, although I'm actually talking to you at the moment from Sciences Po in Paris, where I'm lucky to spend a semester. And I'm chair of the Knowledge Network on Climate Assemblies, which is funded by the European Climate Foundation. The book, which is, I think, has a number of virtues. It's short, it's open access, and it has pictures. I think all of those things are really, really helpful. It is really a chance for me to sort of try and make sense of the relatively recent emergence of climate assemblies or climate citizens assemblies, however we want to talk about them. A couple of sort of headlines, I think, is that assemblies have been really different in their commissioning, in their design, their delivery and follow-up, and that has really significant impact on their impact. That's not a good phrase, but you know what I mean. And on climate governance, no two climate assemblies have been the same. And I think, you know, the overall message is that designed well, implemented well, followed up well, they can make a real difference to what is at the moment very dysfunctional climate governance and democracy more broadly. And I think you asked about inspiration. I guess the inspiration is the work that we've been doing with the Knowledge Network over the last 3 years. But there's a longer history of my own research practice and activism in this area. And I think it's really important to try to summarize that learning, partly because I think there's a lot of things being said about citizens assemblies and climate assemblies, often by people who have actually no direct experience of them. So I thought it was really important for me to, since I have this kind of overview about what's happening, is to try and make sense of it, really, and try to share that with anyone who's interested.
You go through in quite excellent detail, systematizing many of the recent climate assemblies, particularly European ones, as that's where they've really taken off. What was something that you found new or striking or unique in your systemization and categorization of these climate assemblies, their processes, their outputs, commissioning context?
Gosh, that's a very interesting question. I mean, I don't think necessarily so much came out while writing the book, because a lot of it's been coming out over the last 3 years through the Knowledge Network program of activity. I think the thing that is most striking for me is I think we know very well how to bring citizens together in a way that is meaningful in order that they can generate robust recommendations on climate or whatever area of citizens assemblies we're talking about. So I think we got the citizen engagement bit really, really not sorted out. There's still lots of disagreements. There's still ways that we could do that better. But I mean, we know we have a pretty good idea of how to work with citizens well. What we fail to do is to actually embed that within our political systems. And that embedding can happen in different ways. We can talk about it in terms of if it's being commissioned by a public administration, the extent to which that public administration has prepared itself to receive those recommendations. It always surprises me that so much effort has gone into running an assembly and so little effort into actually getting ready to receive that and prepare. Because that, you know, that in a sense, that's a design project, a political project in its own right. And I think that's been really neglected. I think the same is true for those assemblies that primarily thinking about engage, you know, are looking to check or affect public discourse. Very often they haven't got the media and communication strategy necessary to do that. So I think the thing that I've really learned from this is, you know, we kind of know, we know how to run a good climate assembly. What we don't know is how to land it, or what we're feeling around is how to land it well.
Mm. What was the process then in getting empirical evidence, or how do you generate empirical evidence from something that is at its core really qualitative, conversational, individual? What was that process like?
Yeah, I mean, I've been incredibly fortunate. I keep mentioning Knocker, but you know, I've been really fortunate to be at the center of this the last 3 years of this sort of development of a community of practice around assemblies. So I've learned a lot from the people who have produced guidance or briefing documents for Knocker, the workshops we've held. I mean, really excellent people at the forefront. This could be it could be practitioners, it could be policy officials who have been commissioning, it could be civil society organizations who have been around these organizations, participated in assemblies. So it's kind of a whole load of knowledge there, particularly around the National Assemblies, because that's what we focused on initially, where I've had access that I wouldn't normally have as an academic, if you like, as a sort of traditional academic research project. So it's almost been sort of learning by doing. And the other thing that you don't see with Knocker is that I and others have spent a lot of time working closely with public officials and civil society organizations who are designing, commissioning and developing assemblies. So that sort of real detail of sort of being in the room with people as they're trying to work this stuff through. So if it was an academic exercise, you might think about this as sort of ethnography in some way. And sometimes I wish I'd actually kept a research diary, because I think that would have been really interesting. But a lot of this is sort of firsthand engagement with people who are doing. And they're doing in different kinds of ways. Either they're doing because they're practitioners, they're doing because they're commissioners, or they're doing because they're advocates in the space. So in a sense, there isn't a systematic data set. I've been trying to learn from that mass of sort of evidence and experience and conversations. That's the data set, if you like.
Was your aim in writing, or did it change at all, to create a useful piece of information for those doers, be they practitioners, facilitators, potential commissioners? Was there a targeted approach to how you wrote and went about generating evidence for this book?
Yeah. I mean, it is a book that is aimed at people who have an interest in climate assemblies, you know, and that could be public officials, it could be civil society advocates, it could be practitioners. And I've tried to write it and first of all, it is a short book. Again, I reiterate that. It's written purposely to be a fairly quick read. It is, I hope, written in an accessible style. And there's a couple of people I should thank for helping me develop that style. It's not a standard academic book. I hope it's not a dry read. And so it really is an attempt to kind of put out there to people that this is how I make sense of what's happening, and also the future directions that assemblies might go. And I hope I've written it in a way that for those people who are coming to this quite new, it's a useful introduction. And for those who are quite familiar with it, actually, there's some provocations at the end about where I think assembly practice might be going, and what the limits of what we're doing are, and what the possibilities are. So, I mean, everyone hopes that their book's accessible to everybody, but I hope, you know, right the way through, from someone who's been in this field for 20 years to my mum and dad, who are kind of interested in what I do, this might actually be the first book that they both read.
For what it's worth, my parents fall in that same bucket, and I'm already planning a purchase for them. In the latter half of your book, you identified four areas that you think will enhance the impact of climate assemblies, those being remit, uptake from a sponsoring body, engagement from non-sponsoring stakeholders, and engagement from the broader public. Do you think that there's any one or combination of these that is either most difficult to get right or most overlooked? Is there one that you think is there a part in the process that feels particularly important and often missed or easy to miss designing and implementing climate assemblies?
All of the above, I think they're all really difficult in different ways. I mean, some are easier to sort out than others, like remit is that, you know, getting a remit right is, you know, thinking about the remit and the purpose of the assembly. That's kind of in some ways simple, but goodness knows how many people make a mistake at that point. I think more challenging is probably a sort of broader public engagement. And simply because, I mean, you and I are really interested in these, and we can't believe that everybody else isn't, and they don't want to spend their entire time reading about the latest climate assembly. Both of us, you know, we're a bit geeky like that. And so I think a media communications person said to me, just because you find it interesting doesn't mean anyone else will. And I think that was a really helpful thing. So I think we don't know how to message climate assemblies well. And part of this is also because we're so reliant on third parties, on journalists, on sort of influencers, depending upon what format we're thinking about. So there's a lot of steps between running the assembly and broader public understanding and engagement and interest. So I think that's something that none of us have really cracked. I think we've got to think carefully about how we talk about assemblies. We need to think about how we, think about cultural reproductions. How do we get assemblies into everyday conversations? I mean, I know a group of artists who are really interested in this space, and they're thinking about, you know, I know someone who's trying to get a comedy series commissioned around assemblies, because, you know, and it's that kind of stuff that people like you and me who organize these things or commission, you know, are kind of like involved in them in different ways. You know, that's not what we're good at. So I think there's this whole communication, cultural reproduction, it becoming something that people are interested in and familiar with. That's going to be a real challenge. And that's not to say that that's the end goal of all assemblies, because I think a lot of assemblies, their primary purpose is actually to feed into better policy. But a lot of people in our space want, and I think they should, they want to see that resonance. They want to see that. And if we are going to see this institution well embedded within our political systems, then we're going to need to see that kind of resonance. I think we're really at the foothills of getting that right.
I think a workplace comedy about a climate assembly would be.
This is what, when I was talking to this guy to Paul, who's the guy who is a comedy writer, he was saying just the comedy value of 50 to 100 people who are utterly different from each other, just the first conversations they have with each other. We all know the inverted commas, the comedy value of some moments within assemblies. I mean, everyone takes them so seriously, but they are funny. You know, they have their moments, they have their lightness as well, and obviously their seriousness as well. And I think that would just be, it could be amazing. And then thinking about how you embed that within a wider public authority, you know, people not knowing why they're running it, or, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, I can imagine it really, really working.
I agree.
Didn't expect this conversation to start talking about comedy programs, but that's fine, you know.
I think it's a testament to the power of citizens' assemblies. They're multifaceted, they're multi-purpose. To that point, though, there is a question of storytelling that I think a lot of us in the field are talking about, and how we're taking something that is intrinsically and inherently about individual stories to further better policy. Yeah. And yet there's that, what's difficult for us, I've found, is that translation of something incredibly personal into something that is very professional and political and legislative, and then further iterations into this is still very personal and it's relatable, and that's what it's good at.
Yeah, I think, and there are different. I mean, we're getting into a conversation that's outside the remit of the book, in a sense. But I think there are different storylines, aren't there? So there are storylines that you need about these processes within public authorities, for example. You know, kind of those kind of stories about what kind of authority are we that engages with these kinds of participatory processes. And then you've got what you know, those very personal stories of people in assemblies, which are going to resonate incredibly with, you know, in new and traditional media. And I know that, for example, in I think it was in Austria, in the Austrian Assembly, they were very successful at engaging with regional media to tell the stories of the people from that region who were in the assembly. And I think that was a really interesting kind of process. And I think there's an interesting balance here, and I do mention it briefly in the book, between some people who really want to protect and defend the assembly space and make sure that citizens in that space are sort of, you know, are in a safe space and are free from outside influence, and others who I think quite rightly say, if we want this to resonate, we've got to tell the story of the people in it in real time. We can't just leave it to afterwards and start storytelling then. So, you know, that's a really interesting one. And I know that some people found, you know, are not, there are many different reasons, but some people and were not as impressed as I am by the French assembly, because it tended to be more open in that way. But I think, you know, there's a balance to be had in order that those kind of stories can get out. So I think as you rightly say, that we in this space tend to be more process nerds, and I think, you know, we need to open up this space to storytellers, to those people who can work with narrative, because it ain't us. Except for the book, the narrative of the book and the story of the book is excellent, of course. But, you know,
the book is, it reads like a Brothers Grimm novel. It's stories, yeah, upon can stories.
I think you're pushing it now.
Well, then, to bring it back to the book, if there's any takeaway or sort of, to bring it back to Brothers Grimm, moral of this story. What was your perhaps guiding light or singular purpose? Maybe not singular is the right word. Guiding purpose as you were writing and finishing this book.
I think going back to some of the things we were saying earlier, I think that there is no single recipe for a robust climate assembly. There's not like a single, you know, everybody should follow the following pattern and it will work. But I think what's essential for any assembly is that an essential component is the development of an impact strategy, and that impact strategy being a fundamental part of what is done from the very start of the process. So I think that's, for me, the big lesson. It's too often overlooked, whether we're talking about, you know, the permanent assemblies that are now emerging in places like Milan or Brussels, whether we're talking about processes that are being run by civil society, either, you know, kind of like to try and open up issues, you know, the People's Plan for Nature in the UK, the Norwegian assembly that's going to be happening on the profits of their sovereign oil fund, or whether we're talking about some of these more radical ideas that are out there from activists who are looking to create these, you know, alternative spaces through assemblies, whichever those they are, it isn't just about getting the citizens together. It's thinking about how we design this to have impact. Otherwise, we're just playing around. And, you know, we are facing a climate crisis. We're facing a nature crisis. We're facing a democratic crisis. So if we're not thinking about how we impact on that, then I think we're doing a disservice to those people who are participating. And I guess the other key takeaway is, please share the book.